This is Donald Hussig with Loving the Earth Environmental Revolution. Joining us today is Dr. Joseph Bowman from the National Institute of Occupational Safety and Health. Good morning, Dr. Bowman.
Good morning, Donald.
Thanks so much for giving us your expert knowledge, sharing with us your expert knowledge on the radio frequency radiation. Dr. Bowman is an expert in the subject area of radio frequency radiation health effects. And let's start off, will you give me and the listeners some of your academic and employment background?
Well, I was trained as a physical chemist. I have my PhD in chemistry and started to learn research skills there. But I started applying my knowledge to occupational health and eventually became certified as an industrial hygienist. And my research has focused for the past 25 years on health effects from electric and magnetic fields. That includes power lines as well as cell phones and radio frequency electric and magnetic fields.
Okay. And as far as with NIOSH, how long have you been with the National Institute of Occupational Safety and Health?
Again, about 25 years, although I did have 6 years in the University of Southern California where I first got involved with electromagnetic fields in between my two stints at NIOSH. So for the past 22-some years, I have been at NIOSH concentrating on electromagnetic fields.
Okay.
And there, of course, at NIOSH, the focus is on risks to workers,
right.
Although they're, since EMF are both in the general environment as well as workplaces, I somewhat go back and forth.
Yes, that's a very unique and interesting part of this with the radio frequency radiation and the EMF, this matter of there being the occupational exposures. And they're different to some degree, but there is that matter of the fact that the energy is out there in the the global environment. And so it is also the non-workers, just the average person that's also getting some exposure. I don't know very much about the radio frequency radiation. And do you want to, for speed's sake, do you want to start telling this RF radiation? Or I don't know how you talk about it. Do people just say RF, or how do they talk about the radio frequency radiation?
Well, RF is the common abbreviation, and that will speed things up a bit to say RF.
Okay, sounds good to me.
And
Could you just give us a little rundown on, an RF 101?
Okay. Well, radio frequency, as you can imagine, was originally created for radio broadcasting. And now with all the modern technology, wireless technologies, it ranges not only for radios, but cell phones, laptops, the internet, but it also includes radar, microwave ovens. RF is used in workplaces for heating materials. It is used to seal the plastics in anything from waterbeds to ring binders to tents. And then on the lower end, it's used to heat treat metals. So it has a radio frequency in the modern environment has a wide range of applications both in workplaces and in the home environment now.
Okay. Moving closer to this, the heart of my interest is health. We're a cancer prevention group. Let's talk about exposure. There has to be exposure before there's any concern, any issue with health. What is exposure and how is exposure measured?
Well, the first thing that I start with when talking about RF health effects is to distinguish RF radiation from the other kinds of radiation that people are aware of, like X-rays or nuclear radiation, because their health effects are vastly different. X-rays and nuclear radiation are called ionizing radiation because when they strike our body, they ionize our proteins or our DNA. In other words, they kick out an electron and make proteins and DNA charged particles or ions. And needless to say, that makes a big difference to their chemistry within our body and can start doing all kinds of things that our body isn't programmed to do. And that's why X-rays and nuclear radiation are known to cause cancer and can be quite lethal. So that's why when you have an X-ray, they do their best to shield your sensitive organs. On the other end of the spectrum, RF radiation is still an electromagnetic field just like X-rays, but its frequency is much, much slower, and that means it interacts with our body differently. Instead of creating ions, it heats our body. It interacts with water molecules and causes them to spin. And if there's enough intensity there and enough water molecules are spinning, it can actually heat the tissue. And, of course, high enough it can actually cook the tissue. And that, of course, isn't good for our health.
Okay. So let's move on. So do you feel that you've given us this basic primer, you know, the most information you can convey to us in a relatively brief period of time? We've got about an hour to do this. You've heard this subject of, you know, what the exposure actually entails, you know, what it is, you know, what's physically happening, what's chemically happening. I guess another element of the exposure.
Well, one more thing I should add is that for wireless sources like cell phones that are close to our body, the exposure is measured as the amount of energy absorbed in their body, the power absorbed. And the units are, if you go on the internet and look for the exposures of cell phones, the units are expressed as SAR, or specific absorption rate. And that is the power absorbed by a gram of tissue. And that is how exposure is measured by occupational hygienists and physicists for RF radiation.
Okay. And now power. See, I took some physics, but not real recently.
Mm-hmm.
How does power compare to, say, you know, say, what is the definition of power?
Power is the amount of energy absorbed per second.
Okay.
Or in the case of, say, a light bulb, where you're also talking about the wattage of a light bulb, the wattage is the power. So that's the amount of energy that the light bulb gives off in a second.
Okay, I understand. Let's see then. We've talked about, you know, what it is that's happening to some degree. We've talked about how to know how much of it is happening. So let's go on to talk about the health effects. Let's begin talking about the health effects that occur in workers, you know, because they are probably in most cases the most heavily exposed, and then some talk of how that might, you know, give us a window on the health effects, you know, the potential for health effects in the, you know, the general public.
Well, the first thing to get clear is that the proven health effects are due to the tissue heating, like I described earlier. And our body can absorb a certain amount of energy without actually heating. We're warm-blooded animals, so if it's a hot day and we're picking up a lot of heat, our circulatory system works overtime to keep our tissue at 98.6 degrees Fahrenheit. But if the amount of RF exceeds the thermal control threshold, you actually do get thermal heating. And if that happens to a person, you can get all kinds of adverse health effects. You can get burns, particularly from hand contact to an RF, a strong RF emitter, not a cell phone, obviously, but something on the order of a radio broadcast tower. It can cause cataracts to the eyes. Birth defects it can affect the circulatory system, so a wide range of effects are possible if you have tissue heating.
Okay. Tell me this. Does the exposure, and this is kind of jumping back a little bit, but I'm just learning about this. I don't know very much about it. Does the exposure cause any other physical effects than the heating?
Well, that is a very controversial area within RF research. There have been laboratory studies showing so-called non-thermal effects, and they range from genetic effects to effects on the brain. And the most controversial of all is cancer from cell phones. By design, the cell phones do not heat tissue. Even if the phone might feel warm, that's just ordinary warmth from the battery. It's not the RF. The RF from a cell phone is so low it doesn't heat at all. It's below the thermal threshold. But nonetheless, human studies have shown, some human studies, not all, have reported some increase in cancer risks, brain cancer risks, and also risks of acoustic neuroma, a tumor in the acoustic nerve, from long-term exposures to cell phones, long usage of cell phones for 10 or more years.
And it appears to be the case that it is the RF that's involved?
Well, there is some evidence of that. My own research with an international collaboration actually did calculations of the power absorbed in the brain from the cell phones that the subjects actually used and reported to the interviewer. And then we used laboratory data to figure out the energy absorbed at the site of the tumor and added it all up over their lifetime of cell phone use. And when we expressed that energy for each subject and looked at the cancer risk, we saw a clearer response than if you just looked at, say, the time of use, like other studies had done. So
okay.
There is a little bit of evidence that is actually the RF that is responsible for the increased brain cancer risks.
Okay. Is there any thinking being done? You know, has anybody done any writing about what might be taking place that is actually, you know, that you know, what is the mechanism of the damage from the power exposure that imposes the cancer risk?
That actually has been studied quite a bit, and the bottom line is that there's no identified mechanism, and that was picked up on by Time magazine in their most recent issue, where they have an article entitled "Fearing Well" by Jeff Wise, who looks at different kinds of risks in the environment, from flying to obesity to smoking and so forth, and rates them as to how dangerous they are compared to our thoughts about them. And he lists cell phone radiation as something that we fear but is not dangerous. And his argument is it may be physically impossible for cell phone radiation to cause cancer. And that is a powerful argument when scientists evaluate the other kinds of evidence that suggests the opposite.
You see, I just don't go with all that. How could it be physically possible that it didn't cause cancer if there's evidence that...
I said physically impossible.
How could it be physically... Well, I think I actually misspoke. How could it be physically impossible for it to cause cancer if there is evidence that exists that there's a correlation between increased exposure, you know, more power going to the brain and more cancer coming out.
Well, that there's two possible explanations to that. First, when you do these statistical studies with people, these are not controlled experiments. And so the epidemiologists that do these studies are very aware that there's sources of bias that could create the appearance of risk. And that's certainly the case with these interview studies nowadays where the interviewer calls subjects and tries to persuade them over the phone to participate in the interview, and the person is thinking, oh, this is just a telemarketer, and hangs up. So one possibility is that these kind of errors in the epidemiology caused this apparent correlation. The other possibility is that the physicists haven't thought of all the possibilities, and that's certainly been true in the past, is that, you know, the conventional wisdom among physicists might be wrong, but exactly how it would be wrong is not at all clear.
Right. And so then, based upon your expert knowledge of the RF, do you consider it to be something that is a trivial matter, you know, the cancer risk imposed by cell phone use?
Well, it's not trivial from a public health point of view. From an individual point of view, we're only looking at less than a doubling of the risks of what are already very rare cancers. So for each individual, the risk isn't that large. But since billions of people are now using cell phones, even a small risk could end up affecting healthcare costs. So from a public health point of view, it's not trivial. For an individual, if the statistical evidence turns out to be correct, there is something there, and it's fortunately something that can be reduced by cutting down on the amount of radiation that is getting to your brain.
Right. So tell me, we've talked quite carefully and clearly about the matter of the exposure and this particular health effect, the, you know, the cancer risk, you know, the cancer outcome. Let's talk now about what's really happening, you know, say like what is happening out in the, you know, the world. You know, there's the workplace and that's happening there too, but even maybe to my mind, even maybe just as much or more so out in the just the, you know, the streets and the homes and the offices. This thing of there being more than one source of the radio frequency, the RF. Say like a person is working on a laptop and then they get a cell phone call and they're listening on the cell phone. What is happening then? You know, let's just kind of work our way through that. Is there more exposure taking place if you're sitting there in front of the laptop and it's working? You know, it's bringing this data in, you know, and maybe not sending it out. I'm sure there's a difference there. But just say a laptop is sitting there showing you, you know, some internet page, so it's, you know, bringing that data there, and then the cell phone call going on. Is there more exposure to the RF happening at that moment?
Right. There is more radio waves. Each device, the cell phone and the laptop, both use radio waves to do their job. So there is more radio waves there, but if you recall, I was talking about a thermal threshold. Well, both devices are below the thermal threshold. So as far as health risks are concerned for thermal effects, there's still no risk at all.
Okay. But say then, let's just go to that other part of the health risk, this thing of the possibly something happening that imposes increased cancer risk. Is there you know, does it seem, and I'm sure this is getting more and more uncertain, you know, as we just delve deeper and try to understand more fully, but is there a reason to conclude that the exposure from the cell phone and the laptop is likely to impose more cancer risk than just the exposure from one of those devices?
We don't really know because we don't know the mechanism.
Okay.
Now, the study I described to you where we did calculate the RF dose at the tumor site, there it does suggest that the risk from two cell phone calls is does add up.
Okay.
But the laptop emits so much lower than cell phones that we really don't know if the laptop contributes anything at all to cancer risk. It's
okay.
never been studied, for one thing, and secondly, it's much lower than the cell phones that made up the bulk of exposures in this study that goes back really to early in the 21st century and has exposures going back into the 1990s.
Okay. So then, in thinking about this, just to kind of like make this really clear for the public, and when you say the amount of exposure from the laptop is lower, that means lower power?
That's right.
Okay.
Lower SAR, lower power absorbed per piece of tissue.
Okay. And that goes back to the very basics of how energy is considered. And so it seems very reasonable to me. It seems very, very reasonable to me to think that.
And the other thing about a laptop is that generally it's further away from our body, which is one of the reasons it makes it lower. But also, if you're actually having it on your lap, your legs are much less a vital tissue than your head is where the cell phone is. So
right.
Where the power is absorbed is also a factor in its health risk.
Okay. We're, it's really cool the way you're a genius of this. I love talking to you about this because you're just so clear and real and scientific, and I think it's the physics and the chemistry, you know, that you have such a depth on that's making this go so good. Let's talk then a little bit more about the multiple exposures, just to kind of like nail down. We have kind of talked about it, but just to kind of like make it really, really tight.
Okay.
So then you would measure, you know, if you're going to do this just the best you could do it, say you get a person out there, if there was some way of measuring the total amount of power that is, you know, that is absorbed by the tissue of that person, say in a day's time of wandering around, whatever they do, you know, if you could measure the total amount of that, and it will be that particular kind of power, right? There must be, you know, say a way of measuring the power that comes from radio frequency waves, you know, radio frequency
mm-hmm.
radiation. If you could
yep.
measure all that, then you would know, and it would just be a number. It would be this total of power.
Yeah.
You would know how much exposure they'd had. It would be the most reasonable estimate that could be made by scientists at this time
mm-hmm.
of how much exposure had taken place. Okay, that sounds good. So say then in the case of, I'll give you a real-life example. I go to a public library in the village of Potsdam, New York. They have wireless internet.
Mm-hmm.
It's located next door to a fire station, which I assume has some kind of communications that could potentially use, you know, radio frequency radiation.
Yeah, that's almost certainly the case. They've
yep.
got their communication system with their cruisers, and there's antennas on somewhere on the building that broadcasts out to the police cars.
Yep, and see, there's the fire station, and then there's a police station also located right in the actual building where the library is. The fire station's next door.
Mm-hmm.
And there's fraternity houses, you know, located in the block, you know, right across the street from here. So just tell me, say somebody's in that public library, they're working on a laptop, they got a cell phone going, there's a bunch of other cell phones in there. Would the reality, you know, what is really happening be that there would be some input of power, you know, some, you know, you're totaling up the power, you know, you got these numbers you're adding up.
Mm-hmm.
Would there be some increment of power being added from every one of those sources?
Oh, yes. Now, if he actually did this kind of measurement, which would really push the limits, because not only do you have to measure out in the environment, which is feasible, but you also have to figure out how it gets into the body, which really requires computer simulations to fully work that out. Or alternatively, when they really want to get it right, they do laboratory experiments with human models that have the same electric properties. So it gets very complicated, but assuming that you can do it,
okay.
You have many things that knock down the radio waves that are getting to an individual. The building itself shields the radio waves to some degree. There's also the police station antennas are broadcasting out far, so they don't go down directly to the library. So there's a lot of details there that makes our RF environment, there's more RF in the environment, obviously, than there was 20, 30 years ago before all this wireless technology, but it is still well below the thermal threshold.
Okay. But is it well below the is there, like, there really, you know, there has any, there's no cancer threshold, right?
No.
Is this, see, in my knowledge of chemical carcinogenesis,
well, let's say this. Our information is not good enough to even look for a threshold. The argument at the moment is whether there's anything there at all or whether it's due to the errors I talked about earlier.
Okay. But it also may be the case that there is no threshold?
I don't think so. The argument that there's no threshold applies to ionizing radiation, where a single photon of an X-ray is capable of ionizing a DNA molecule if it hits it, and an ionized DNA molecule is capable of a mutation.
Yep.
Which, if you're very unlucky, could lead to a cancer. So that's why with ionizing radiation, sort of the default assumption is that there's no threshold.
Right.
With other kinds of cancer that operate in different ways, that operate more downstream from mutations, the cancer goes through stages. First you have a mutation. The mutation then has to escape the cell's defense mechanism and affect a cell. That cell has to go rogue and so forth. Well, for cancers that are occurring at later stages, there could be thresholds.
Okay.
So, actually, I'm just speculating. We really
Perfect.
Don't know because we don't know what the mechanisms are.
And see, where I'm coming from is this knowledgeable, this knowledge of chemical carcinogenesis.
Right.
And it's very clear to me that when you have, say, for example, just arsenic, for just an example, when you have more, more quantitative, a larger number of lifetime exposure to arsenic, then you have a larger amount of risk, and then it is believed that because of the mechanism that has evolved of how the chemicals damage genetic material, that this is a cumulative matter because, say, as you said with the ionizing radiation, that if some damage could be done that was relevant to eventually damaging the gene to the extent that it wouldn't function properly, and then that would be a cell line that was initiated in carcinogenesis, that then there was this reasonable conclusion that then even down to a very, very low, down to anything more than zero exposure, there would actually be some risk involved.
Mm-hmm.
Because
with radiation, both ionizing and non-ionizing, it's somewhat different, particularly with non-ionizing radiation, whose effects on the body are almost certainly transient, that if there were some kind of microheating, as soon as the RF goes off, the body would return to its normal temperature. It's not like a chemical which can accumulate in the body, and as you get more and more exposure, more accumulates, and the risk increases that way. That can't happen with non-ionizing radiation.
I see that part of it, yep.
What can accumulate is that every time you're exposed above some threshold, say, you have a probability of a cell going rogue, say, and becoming cancerous. Probability increases every time you're exposed above the threshold. So in that sense, your risk for cancer can add up as you are exposed over time. But that's making, again, a whole bunch of assumptions. That's just really speculation.
But it makes sense from what you said about measuring the amount of power and then seeing that it was more like, say, more power.
Right. Yeah, that one study does provide some support for that argument. That does elevate it as to the realm of a hypothesis with one piece of supporting evidence. But a lot more evidence is needed before it becomes more than just a hypothesis that we speculate about.
So the state of the scientific knowledge at this moment in time, January the 4th, 2012, is that one study has been published in the peer-reviewed scientific literature.
Well, that isn't quite true. I need to mention that there's this International Agency for Research on Cancer, which has undertaken for decades a program of evaluating the evidence about all kinds of agents as to whether they cause cancer or not. And they just recently held their first workshop on RF back in May, and that workshop concluded that from the study I described and then several other studies and some animal studies, that it, RF is a possible human carcinogen. And, of course, the lack of a mechanism weighed against that judgment, so possible means that possibly not.
Understand. Okay, let's see. I think we got two more questions. Let's jump on this. What can people do? You know, if people are concerned about this, and it appears, just say you as a scientist and as a person that's out there, you live in this world that everybody else is living in, and you are there with the RF as much as anyone else, well, to varying degrees, I guess, depending on whether you use a cell phone or use a laptop or use wireless or use dial-up or, hardwire connections. But you're still out there with more of this radiation than what used to be the case. Do you feel that there's any need to do as much as you can to minimize, lower your, rather than just having as much exposure as you could just however much you get, is there any basis, based on what you know, to make some kind of reasonable effort to reduce the amount of exposure that you receive? And is that possible?
Let me collect my thoughts here. Let's take your last question first. Is it possible? And the answer is yes. The higher power absorbed in the brain comes because the cell phone, when you talk, is transmitting radio waves to a base station miles away. It's right next to your head, so the radio waves also go into your head, and there's power absorbed in your brain every time you're talking on a cell phone with it next to your head. So that can be reduced in a number of ways. Obviously, you can talk less, but you can also use a Bluetooth or an earpiece or the speakerphone mode or text message, things that get the cell phone away from your head. will reduce the amount of energy absorbed in your brain over the long time. So, yes, you can reduce your exposure, reduce your energy absorbed by taking those fairly straightforward measures. Whether the evidence justifies that, I think it's now at the stage where that's somewhat an individual call. Certainly on the scale of cancer risks, things like cigarette smoking are far greater cancer risks than what we're talking about with cell phones. And certainly in terms of how you live a healthy life, it's like I mentioned earlier, the additional risk, even if the evidence turns out to be true and all these questions are resolved somehow, the possible risk at the moment does not appear to be make cell phones one of the top-ranked cancer hazards.
Okay, well, let's just I see that. But to this, what about how does the total amount of power absorbed by a person in a particular moment, how, and in fact, let's not even say that. I don't think we need to say that. How does the amount of energy absorbed by one human body that comes from RF, how does the total amount compare to the amount that is absorbed by the average cell phone user? You know, is the total something that needs to be considered in addition to just, you know, the cell phone use, or is the cell phone so powerful and so, you know, putting out so much power that it really is the real big deal, and you don't have to really be concerned about the total of, say, the, you know, all the sources adding up as we spoke of earlier?
I think that's a good way to think about it, that because it is right next to our head, and because in order to make cell phones efficient, they've been engineered to come within a factor of 10 of the safety standards, they the proportion of RF energy absorbed by our bodies are predominantly caused by using cell phones next to your head,
okay.
Overwhelmingly. Any kind of other source, like the Wi-Fi on your desktop computer that's further away from your body, is a factor of 100 or 1,000, depending on the details, from what you're getting from the cell phone.
Okay, so in other words, if we had a column and we were adding up the amount of energy that the body absorbs, say, in a day's time, you know, so that would be, you know, I guess that's power, right? That's energy per amount of time.
Right.
So if you were adding up, you had a column, and you're totaling the power, you know, the amount of power, which seems to be the relevant number, or the entity, I guess. If you were totaling
the
amount of...
Well, I mean, you can think of it in two ways. For thermal effects, it's definitely power.
Yep.
But for this one cell phone paper, we took the power from a given cell phone, and then we said, well, how long did you use the cell phone, so we could put in the time factor, too, and get
right.
energy.
Right.
You can think of it in both ways, to cut down the power at a given moment or to cut down the energy over time.
Okay. So in other words, if you were totaling, if you just did this, say, like for one day, you take the amount of power that is absorbed over a period of time, or the amount of energy in, it will be, I think that's more relevant, the amount of power, the amount of energy over a period of time.
Yeah.
If you're going to total it up, the biggest number by far in that total, if it was a cell phone user, would be cell phone use, then all the other little numbers are put down below there will be much smaller, say 100 to 1,000 times smaller?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that seems very clear, then, that the cell phone use is very relevant. I was kind of, you know, without having talked to you, I was thinking that, well, what if there's, you know, a lot of, you know, maybe these police stations or these fire stations or these radio stations, maybe they are, you know, maybe the amount of energy that is being transmitted by them is similar, you know, maybe on the same order of magnitude as the cell phone, and that if the cell phone is causing cancer in these epidemiological studies, then that it would be reasonable to think, well, then it certainly wouldn't want to be doubling up and then tripling and quadrupling the amount of exposure you're getting. And I think we could say the exposure, you know, you could, at this level of knowledge, say exposure is the power.
Right, yes, that's true. I think that's my understanding at the moment. I prefer if I could go back and actually get out my numbers and double check that, but at least from my understanding at the moment, that you summarized very well what our RF environment is like.
Okay.
Now, there are times when, you know, it could be different, that if
Say for example, I'm just thinking of as we go along here. What about, say, the person that lives, you know, where there's the most power from a cell phone tower, you know, hitting, you know, people, a person, you know, wherever they happen to live, where it comes down, you know, or where that's the most powerful, you know, you have the most energy out there that could be absorbed in a particular amount of time, and it's doing it constantly, so it'd be pretty much, you know, a large, you know, quantity all the time. How will that compare with, say, a person also using a cell phone? Will those two numbers, you know, you take the amount of power from the tower and then the amount of power from the cell phone use, average cell phone use, would those two numbers be relatively of the same order of magnitude?
Cell phone towers, turns out, don't really crank out that much power. The only kind of exception I was thinking of that NIOSH has investigated is a radio or TV broadcast antenna, which generally are fenced off, and so very rarely is someone living, you know, right next to one of those broadcast towers. But that would be the kind of thing that where you'd have to think twice about in comparing it with cell phones. But even there, to build a broadcast tower, the Federal Communication Commission requires that the engineers figure out what people are exposed to outside the fence. And it has to be below the same safety limits that apply to cell phones.
So in other words, based upon the effort that was made to site the radio or TV broadcast tower, people would not get any more power exposure from that tower, no matter what, you know, if they were living out, you know, in the vicinity, they wouldn't get any more exposure than from one cell phone?
Right.
Oh, wow, that's quite encouraging. Sure. Yeah, it's just so complicated. See, it is, to my mind, this seems more difficult to comprehend than, say, a chemical exposure. You know, I feel very, very, very extremely comfortable with thinking about and discussing, you know, the complexities of chemical exposure carcinogenesis. But with this, I'm not familiar with it, but it's also more complicated too, you know. It seems like it's more difficult to understand, so it's slightly more frightening.
I would agree with that. When I teach radio frequency, electric and magnetic fields, or electromagnetic fields to occupational health professionals, in an introductory course, I say, I don't expect you to become an expert from an hour lecture. This is a complicated subject that basically we have specialists for to deal with the tough questions. Even in all that we've talked about today, just really skimmed the surface about what radio frequency radiation is, how it interacts with the body. That takes a lot of physics and biology to fully understand.
So one more quick question then. We've covered a lot of ground. I really appreciate it. And I'm sure that you being one of the few real experts in this, that you are a very busy scientist doing your research and then also trying to make use of that knowledge that you're accumulating. Is the National Institute of Occupational Safety and Health, you know, and I'm seeing this, you know, I know this is occupational safety and health. So let's rephrase that question. in the work of dealing with occupational exposures, how much education takes place on exposure and health effects?
Well, the bulk of our effort go to situations where workers would be exposed above the safety limits. Now, NIOSH is a research agency primarily, but we Occupational Safety and Health Act also gives us responsibility of responding to concerns from workers and employers. So when we do get a request for one of these health hazard evaluations that involve RF, that's where our main efforts to education occur. A couple years ago, we got a request for a health hazard evaluation from the Federal Laboratory in Boulder, Colorado, for the National Institute for Standards and Technology, which is the agency that also runs the atomic time radio station that provides time signals for techies around the world. So there we not only did measure the RF from the atomic time radio stations and their laboratories and so forth, but we also had several seminars on the health hazards of RF for their employers, for their employees.
Yeah, this seems to be really close to being wrapped up. Let's just recap a little bit. We've discussed this matter of the power. We've discussed the, let's just make one, tight, clear statement on, radio frequency radiation. It is clear that there is something taking place in the body that is a change, there's a change taking place, whether it's just heating or what mechanism it is. There is a change taking place. There is some knowledge about a damage caused by the heating, but there's also some knowledge that it appears that there's, without any clear mechanism with the heating, and whether it's and maybe even something other than heating taking place, that there is some cancer risk imposed. And it does appear that the amount of power increases the amount of the damage, both with the heating and with the cancer risk.
Well, there I have to disagree with you. That what I've talked about in terms of the cancer risk, that's all a possibility.
Okay.
And I'm very disturbed as a scientist that there's not a mechanism that can explain these statistical results.
Okay.
So everything that I've been trying to say about cancer, I should be always saying, this is a possibility. This is,
okay.
There's evidence for this, but it possibly could be wrong.
Okay.
What we do know is that in everyday environments, the RF is not at the level that will cause tissue heating. So as far as what we're sure about, there is not health risks from RF in the environment. With the cancer risks and the possibility of non-thermal health effects, that's where there's been enough questions raised by research that more study is needed.
Okay. That's good. Let's wrap this up. I feel like you've given us a great, effort in sharing your knowledge on this. I really appreciate it. I haven't, talked to you much before, but in talking with you a couple times before, it was clear to me that you knew your stuff and that you'd be a great interview, and you are a great interview, and I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you. You're a great interviewer. This has been very helpful for me to be able to get this information out.
Yeah, I only wish that was a really big part of this. You're a great interview, and I'm a great interviewer, but now there's this whole matter of how great I am at promoting this and getting this radio program out there, and I'm not great at that.
Well, good luck.
You bet. Have a great day.
Take care.
This has been Donald Hussig with Loving the Earth, Environmental Revolution. I've been talking with Dr. Joseph Bowman from the National Institute of Occupational Safety and Health. He is an expert. He's a scientist with expert knowledge on the subject of radio frequency radiation. We're all hoping that by talking to scientists and thinking for ourselves and thinking along the lines that other wise people and intelligent and thinking people have thought, that we can just keep figuring out how to have the best shot at not getting cancer, at having a low cancer risk, low exposure, low cancer risk life. And I'm feeling like we've made a lot of progress today.